Angry Robot presents this unabridged recording of Composite Creatures by Caroline Hardacre. Read by Zoe Mills. Part 1. Chapter 1. There are some things I remember perfectly. I can close my eyes and be there. In school, shaping a stegosaurus with Play-Doh. Climbing stone walls and wooden stiles with Mum. Or even on the observatory roof, hand in hand with Luke, searching through the smog for sparks of life. Even now, I see his face lit green beneath the moon, smiling in absolute awe at the cosmos, and proving, without doubt, that he had eyes only for antiquities, the way things were. The stars were so bright that I could hear them, like glass shattering. They've never shone so brilliantly since. But the fact I can relive all these things so vividly just convinces me that I've made them all up. Each time I play these memories through, Mum or Luke say something new. It's always something that warms my belly, something that makes me feel better. Only occasionally is it something that hits me hard. But even then, it still strikes a low, satisfying note. Telling me I was right about being wrong, all along. What would you call that? I wonder if it matters whether these images are real. It's somewhere to go that's dark and balmy. We all do it, don't we? Where do you go? A long time ago, Mum told me that in her youth, the sky would flock in spring and autumn with migrating starlings, finches, even gulls. Huge grey and white beacons of the sea. I've heard recordings of their calls, somewhere between a lighthouse's horn and a baby's wail. I sometimes close my eyes and imagine how it would sound, as hundreds of gulls moved across the blue like shot spray, all wailing to each other out of sync. Ghosts that swam the sky. I think it would sound like the end of the world. Over the years, Mum had collected all the fallen feathers she'd found in the garden, on the roof, in the gutter. There was nowhere too low for her to stoop, no mud too deep or sticky for her to squish her knees into and scoop out the treasure. She rinsed the feathers as best she could and balanced them in egg cups wedged between books on shelves. "Stuff of stories now," she'd murmur, as she pointed them out to me, one after another, telling me which birds they came from. This one, a barn owl. This one, a crow. But she might have well been naming dinosaurs. I couldn't picture any of them. All the illustrations in Mum's reference books were completely flat. One time, we were sitting on the garden wall together, when a bird landed on a perch above us and made the strangest sound, sort of a low whistle. I'd never seen anything like it, with its fat grey form and striped underbelly. But Mum just laughed at it and clasped my face between her hands. "Oh, he's supposed to think that's a cuckoo, the little patchwork prince. You can almost hear the clockwork." I felt silly then and didn't look back up at the lie, but I kept listening for a telltale ticking that never came. Perhaps Mum could hear something I couldn't. Still, I continued to stroke Mum's collection of genuine feathers, gliding the silky fronds between my fingers. Something about them always made me want to pull away, but Mum encouraged me to keep going, to know what they felt like. But it was confusing for me. Was the feather still alive, without the body it had been attached to? I wanted to stick their sharp shafts into the skin on the back of my hands and wave them in the wind. "Be gentle, Nora," she'd whisper. "The fragile. And who knows if we'll find more?" I wished I could see inside her head. I could almost feel them, her thoughts, or at least the shape of them. She was my Mum, but the things she said, the things she lifted from mysterious drawers, they were from another world. She looked up to the sky for things I couldn't understand, always through her old binoculars, heavy black things, held into shape by stitched skins. She liked to shock me with little facts Things like, when I was little, the sky was full of diamonds that you could only see at night. And me and your gran used to lie on our backs and watch fluffy clouds go by. You could see shapes in them. And if you asked the sky a question, it sometimes told you the future. The more stories she told, the less I believed her, and would gently push my hands into her belly and say, "You're fibbing. Tell the truth." But Mum would just shake her head, so her red curls bounced over her face and promised that it was real. She'd seen it with her own eyes. One night, she even told me that the moon used to be as white as a pearl. At the time, I didn't know what a pearl was, which seemed to make her sadder. She pulled me to her side and pressed the binoculars to my face. "Keep looking, Nora. Up there in the dark. Birds, they might come back. They might." I don't know if I believed that. The birds had just disappeared. It was their choice. The news reported a muddle of reasons for it over the years. Climate change, lack of habitats, a faltering ecosystem. The fact that the earth and sky are turning plastic. I remember when I was little, seeing on TV the reports about initiatives to encourage the building of bird boxes and custom annexes on business premises. Children's TV shows had segments where the hosts showed you how to build your own bug hotel or bird feeder out of an old pine cone. But I didn't know anyone who managed to actually bring anything to roost. Later, after I discovered the joy of watching the world through Mum's binoculars, I did ask her when it had all started, the fading away of wildlife in the wind and soil. But she just looked out of the window and squinted her eyes against the white grey sky. "It all happened so gradually," she said. "I don't think any of us noticed till they'd gone." Mum tried to make me believe the miraculous could happen, that surprises were around every corner. But even then, I only nodded and smiled to be nice, to make her feel better. I'd never understood why people need to believe in something we can't see. It's like reality isn't enough. They constantly need wonder. Or, when Art and I were dating, even in the earliest days, he always threw in the unexpected. For our very first date, we arranged to go for a meal at a French restaurant, La Folie. I spent far too long tangling myself up in dozens of outfits before deciding on a pair of rose gold trousers and black chiffon shirt, only a bit sheer. At 31, I wondered if I was a bit too old for clothes that showed so much, or whether I'd come across as desperate. I ran my hands over the shape of me, repeating to myself the mantra, "I do look good. I do look good." Even after I'd committed to an outfit, I couldn't stop faffing. I tried the shirt my usual way of leaving it loose and flowing, but it just didn't seem right. I then tried tucking it in, but I couldn't stand feeling constrained. In the end, I undid the last three buttons and tied the open panels in a bow. Already the chiffon was sticking to my skin. My hair, a fluffy brown nightmare at the best of times, was unusually coy and submitted to being clipped to the side with a gold triangle pin. I painted my skin in bronze and peach, finishing myself as I would a precious gift. When I caught my reflection in the mirror, I hardly recognised myself and fought the instinct to wipe it all away. Maybe it was good that I felt like a stranger. This was the new me, a new beginning. Perhaps a costume was what I needed. I took a taxi straight to the restaurant, my cheeks burning at how late I was. At one point, I lowered the window to cool myself down, and the caustic air stung my nostrils. It was so much worse in this area of the city. How could I forget to wear perfume? Stupid. All I could hope was that the restaurant had plenty of scented candles and a top-notch purifier. I rolled the window back up and tried fanning my face with my handbag, but a quick glance at my watch and I was distracted again. First impressions are so important.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?